something bonkers is happening in South Africa. A major political movement drawing stadiums of tens of thousands of people has as its organizing principle the killing of white people. Julius Malema, the head of the Economic Freedom Fighters, openly chants, "Kill the Boer, kill the farmer." It's not just rhetoric. This is a man who's made a career out of hate-mongering, singing songs about killing white farmers, and advocating for the seizure of land without compensation. His words aren't just provocative. They're a clear call to genocide.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm saying to you, we've not called for the killing of white people, at least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Most aspiring political leaders should at least be able to rule out genocide, I would think. And even more unsettling is the fact that the crowds continue to listen to Malema and espouse his hateful ideology. None other than Elon Musk, the South African-born tech mogul, is calling out this madness. Musk didn't just post on X, he launched a full-blown orbital strike on Malema, calling him a genocidal lunatic. Seems the only thing more explosive than Musk's rockets might be his tweets about the South African political landscape. President Trump, fed up with the situation, has just announced he's cutting off aid to South Africa. That's right, no more American dollars for a country that seems to be flirting with the idea of genocide under Malema's watch and under his growing influence. Trump's move signals a stark message. America won't fund regimes that echo the darkest chapters of history. During my time in Congress, I had one staff member who was sounding the alarm on this very issue a year ago this month. Listen to my former legislative counsel, John Wilson, on my podcast, sharing the risk of this danger.
We know exactly what they mean by decolonize, and we need to take them at their word. They mean murder and displace, and that's what they're trying to do to the Boers and the farmers in South Africa, and I don't foresee any globalist institution condemning that.
Imagine this. Malema's party could be the kingmaker in the next election, potentially positioning him as the deputy president. That's right, the man who once said, "We are taking the government," might actually end up steering the ship. With Malema emboldened in South Africa's political dynamic, there could be a roller coaster of chaos. We could see policies that lead to bloodshed and death, very similar to South Africa's past. Joining us now, President of the New York Young Republicans, Gavin Wax, and Executive Director of Afrikaner Foundation and Head of Policy of the Solidarity Movement, Ernst Rhodes. Ernst, I'm going to start with you. How should we understand Julius Malema in the context of South African politics, and what are his goals?
Well, so Julius Malema is a very radical black nationalist socialist, according to his own description. A Fanonist, in other words, they adhere to the ideology of a guy called Frantz Fanon, who wrote a book called Wretched of the Earth, which is essentially a philosophy aimed at justifying violence. And Malema has made a name for himself politically here in South Africa by continually calling for violence to be inflicted, especially upon white people and especially upon white farmers. And he's done this not just through speeches in which he talks about slitting the throat of whiteness, in which he encourages his supporters to actively break the law by invading farms, occupying land that doesn't belong to them, but also by chanting slogans such as "Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer," and other similar songs at political rallies.
Gavin, I was surprised to see at these rallies tens of thousands of people gathered. Does Malema wield sufficient power to try to act on these rather genocidal ambitions?
Oh, this is absolutely something that should be taken very seriously. What's been happening in South Africa has been a humanitarian crisis. The plight of the Afrikaners or the Boers is a horrendous crime. It's a crime against humanity. The farm murders, the stealing of land and property, the complete erosion of rights, the complete upending of the sort of post-apartheid liberal order that was supposed to exist in South Africa that we were all told about. That's all really gone to the wayside, and you have these black nationalists, these Marxists, these demagogues now running the country, running it into the ground, frankly, destroying the infrastructure, destroying the economy, causing people to flee, causing money and capital to flee. It's a disaster. South Africa is in a major decline, and they're scapegoating this minority, which happened to be white, the Afrikaners. So I have to praise President Trump for his recent executive order extending refugee status to many of these farmers, these Afrikaners, allowing them to come to the United States to have a better life and to flee from this rabid persecution.
And Ernst, how is this movement by Malema viewed throughout the rest of Africa?
So Malema is is the leader of one of the bigger parties in South Africa, not the ruling party, even though ideologically the Economic Freedom Fighters, the party of which he is the leader, is, as I said, ideologically very close to the ruling party. He used to be the president of the Youth League of the ANC, which is the governing party in South Africa. He broke away largely due to internal leadership squabbles and so forth, starting his own party. He very badly wants to become the president of South Africa, and he has been described as one of the most influential politicians in the country. Lately, his party has had some trouble as a result of internal fighting and so forth. But the fact of the matter remains that the farm murders in South Africa is a very real and a very serious problem, not just in terms of the numbers, but also in terms of the brutality thereof and so forth. And so while we have a real and a tangible problem with farmers' land being invaded, being attacked on their farms, being murdered, being tortured on their farms, we have a politician like this romanticizing this, going onto public platforms, chanting about the murdering of farmers, making jokes about farm murders on social media, and so forth. And what is more concerning is the fact that this isn't addressed. It's not responded to by the South African government or the South African president. As a matter of fact, when Julius Malema made this speech, I think it was tweeted recently by Elon Musk, in which he called for the slitting of the throat of whiteness. Just a few days thereafter, the president of South Africa invited him to join the ruling party, saying, "I can see that you should be a member of our party deep down in your heart." So there's some very serious concerns here, not just about the rhetoric, but the fact that this rhetoric is actually happening. He's chanting about killing farmers, and farmers are actually being attacked and killed on their farms.
I think to the extent that Americans have seen these clips, they've thought, well, this isn't someone in real power. But what you just described, Ernst, is that this is someone who is incredibly close to power, and that this is someone growing closer to power, and in coming elections could, if not, you know, gain power directly from the vote, could certainly be a kingmaker in some way that allows those policies to be more further adopted. And, you know, Gavin, I was going to ask you, how close are we to the bloodshed and the violence? But as Ernst seemed to indicate, it's going on now with some of these glorified murders. But do you think that we're nearing the day when that violence would achieve broader scale and really get noticed by the international community?
Oh, absolutely. And this is another place where President Trump is leading the way, calling attention to this issue that many in the West have tried to ignore. They don't want to talk about the plight of the Afrikaners. But look, the Afrikaners, like my good friend Ernst here, are picking themselves up by the bootstraps. They're leading incredible projects in South Africa to create their own sort of ecosystem, their own communities, like in Orania and other parts of South Africa, where they're creating these Afrikaner communities that are completely self-sufficient, off the grid, so to speak, and are not relying on this very corrupt government that seems to hate them, even as the international community begins to wake up. So we're certainly getting into a situation where things are tense, and obviously as economic situations can worsen in South Africa, I again fear that the Afrikaners will continue to be the scapegoats. They'll continue to be targeted, and the solution needs to be either a sovereign state for the Afrikaners, maybe that's radical, maybe Ernst agrees with me, or settling some Afrikaners here in the United States.
And so the core thesis of that, Gavin, is that you don't believe that there is a future for the Afrikaners in South Africa, given the politics there and these genocidal threats. I want to ask you, Ernst, you know, given this executive order from President Trump giving Afrikaners the ability to come to the United States, do you think many will take President Trump up on that offer? And what type of neighbors could Americans expect in an Afrikaner community?
Well, I think there are two things to be said about the executive order. Firstly, it's very good. It's a very important and a historical moment for President Trump to make a statement such as this. A global leader for the first time in at least three decades, recognizing that South Africa is not this incredible miracle story that the world and the United Nations have been telling us for the last few decades. And so this is a major step. I can tell you that there are certainly some Afrikaners who would like to take up this initiative. But what is very important is something that my friend Gavin has mentioned here, is that there are many Afrikaners who also want to remain in South Africa. In fact, the majority would want to remain. And so recognizing the problem is very helpful. But I also think a very important thing to do that the US might do is becoming involved with institutions in South Africa aiming to create a future for the Afrikaner people, because we want some form of autonomy, and we want to remain here where our culture is. Some people will certainly go to the United States, but I think it's also important for us as a nation to have a place where we can be ourselves, and we can continue to be who we are, and we can continue to flourish within the context of our culture.
Ernst, does that require a separate state, as Gavin Wax indicated, or do you think that there actually can be an integrated future with the Afrikaners in South Africa?
Well, it could be a separate state, but I think the underlying issue here is that the South African political dispensation isn't working. And the ruling party, the ANC in South Africa, is openly aligned with the South African Communist Party, that openly declares that the way for them to promote socialism or to pave the road towards communism in South Africa is through multi-party democracy, which is very unfortunate because, as Churchill said, democracy is a bad system, but it's better than all the other ones. But I do think a very serious problem in South Africa is that the political system is extremely centralized, and we would need a more decentralized system, and that could include various forms of autonomy. It could be territorial autonomy, it could be cultural autonomy, but starting with a mere fact of decentralization would be a very important step.
I got to tell you, Ernst, I mean, if you look at everything going on in the world right now, the future doesn't look particularly bright for semi-autonomous entities. It just is not the trend line. And I don't know if Gavin's is right that it's either sort of get up and come here, be slaughtered, or have your own state with a substantial security interest in indeed doing that. Final question for you, Gavin Wax. We have, for the last decade or two, viewed South Africa as an ally in many respects. They've contributed to the various and sundry wars prior American leaders have wanted to go off and fight. And now with this very racialized political movement alongside the BRICS movement, alongside closer ties to China, do you think 10 years from now we'll look at South Africa as an ally?
No, not at all. I think even saying they're an ally today is probably a stretch. They're certainly part of this global South, as you mentioned, the BRICS, aligning with the East, aligning with China, with Russia, whoever. And I think they've certainly moved out of the Western orbit, and every day they continue to do so more. I think they're going the way of Zimbabwe, frankly, and I think it's only going to continue to radicalize. And I think it's, again, a humanitarian crisis. I think this is a geopolitical and a geostrategic issue for the United States, and I think we need a government in South Africa that is far more moderate, far more respecting of its minorities, and I think it needs to be sort of brought to heel. And if not, again, I reiterate, we need to encourage statehood for the Afrikaners. They're one of the largest stateless people. They certainly deserve their own nation. They have their own history, culture, language, traditions. If anyone deserves a state, it's certainly them. And look, there's even other groups that are pushing to break away from South Africa. You have a very strong and growing a Western Cape independence movement that's also gaining steam. So this is not just limited strictly to the Afrikaners. There are many different groups in South Africa that feel persecuted, that feel that they have become treated like second-class citizens, and it's only going to get worse. The Afrikaners are the first, and it's only going to go on from there until many other different groups are targeted. And it's a sad state of affairs, and it's just really going against the entire narrative that was spun from the 90s onward about this kumbaya moment. It's really kind of fallen flat on its face.
Oh, well, I look forward to following it closely and then having you both back to dissect where it's all headed. Ernst Rhodes, Gavin Wax, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, sir.